You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. I got this guy, Roman Harper, with me. Got some tissues. He might be crying later on. Laugh, cry, he's smiling, he always is crying. So I'm just warning y'all right now, if y'all see a teardrop out his eye, it ain't because he a gangster.
It is not because I'm a gangster. That's totally true. But anyways, tell all of our listeners, wherever you listen to us, follow us, whether it's watching or listening, give us a 5-star rating, hit that follow button, give us a review. Wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, anywhere, we're still there. Give us a like and follow. Now, Peanut, I got to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about our next guest. He's become a really good friend of mine.
Really?
I actually call him somewhat of a mentor because of where he lives, where I live.
Okay.
He's a great person, even better football player. And he's got great, he's in a great place now, I feel like, in his life.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. So let me read the bio real quick.
Before you
third round pick.
I hate the bio.
Third round pick, 2001 draft out of Utah. Dominant receiver when he played in his era.
For sure.
Hall of Fame semifinalist. Now an analyst for NFL media and the host of Cut to It podcast.
Yeah, Cut to It.
Cut to It. Cut to It.
Yeah.
I can't say Cut to It. Just Cut to. Okay.
Cut to It. You said it like you were reading it.
I had to.
As an FBI agent, you should be able to read
it. Hey, I'm slow. Public school, baby.
I'm public school, too.
I'm public school.
No, I'm joking.
You
I'm
had
joking.
The better public school. Ladies and gentlemen, he already talked to Steve Smith Sr.
There we go. Yeah,
appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm going to get right to it.
All right, go ahead.
So before the show, we was talking. We played y'all 2005.
Oh, yeah.
So
you must have been seeing a few of my clips.
Let me get to it. Let me get
everybody's
to it.
Everybody's on Smitty's highlight tape.
No, it's so there was a play. I think maybe second play of the game.
It was the first.
Okay,
first play of the game.
It was a TFL. I got it.
Got him.
No. I got it. Can I talk first? You got your podcast. You do your thing. This is my podcast. Let me do my thing real quick. So first play of the game, I got the TFL.
Okay.
Yes. You'll have a chance to rebuttal. Got the TFL. It was like a tackle for loss or maybe a 1-yard gain, whatever. It was like
you were correct.
The now pass, the bear pass, we call it.
Smoke.
Okay. Smoke pass.
I remember. I apologize.
I don't know if it was that same series. It might have been the second series.
No, it was the same series.
So someone told me it was a signal or whatever. So I try to make the play. You run right by me. You run by Mike Brown. Jeek, juke, skeet, skirt, mm-hmm. Touchdown.
Yeah.
So the next series, I'm mad because I listened to somebody else. I didn't trust my instincts. So me and you, we battling down the field. Mm-hmm. Jake DeLome throws it up. Me and you, we both go up. Two gladiators, two fierce competitors. We both go up. I have the ball in my hands.
Yes.
Chris Harris.
Yes.
Chris Harris came out of nowhere, hits me.
Yes.
He comes down with the ball. I am so mad at Chris Harris. You furious. Should. I'm looking at Chris like.
He should be.
He should I'm
be.
Talking trash.
He did actually
I'm talking
have
trash to Chris Harris. Like cash to Chris Harris. And then I think later that night, he was like, now I'm telling y'all right now, he came down with it, but I came up with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, immediately, not really mad at you.
Yeah.
More mad at Chris Harris.
Yeah.
Because he was just so out of control. Hit me with the friendly fire.
He closed his eyes.
Oh, my God.
If you go back to the replay.
Okay.
You did have it. When you were coming down, I was able to get a little bit.
Grab a little bit.
But it was good. It was one of the interesting things, though, is
I feel like you set me up right now.
No, I'm not. One of the interesting things, until I've really started paying attention, because I really don't watch my stuff.
Yeah.
And because of some things that have happened, I've started to go back and go, you know what? Actually, let me go evaluate myself. Let me go see some of my plays. And so some of these plays are coming up. And so it's actually kind of, it's been not like funny, like, ah, look at me, but it was like, oh man, I forgot that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even remember this, or, you know, so it was brought up, but it was more brought up on accident, less about, ooh, look at me flexing and all that stuff. And like you said, I get a bad rap a little bit of, you know, because I am a pretty active conversator.
No, I
think you're just a fierce competitor.
You know what? The thing about Smitty that I love is that, you know, living in Charlotte, I get to hear this guy on the radio a lot. I think he's an amazing interviewer. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. I think he's conscious with his words. You don't say much that you don't mean. I try not to. Yeah, I don't think you do. And so I think that's where it all comes from. So I think now that we get to see you outside of the mask,
yeah,
it's been really cool to see you, get to know you a little bit more.
Appreciate
and it. Just maybe talk about your own journey from when you first came in, because you said you don't like your resume. So why is that? And then can we maybe talk about your journey through that whole thing? Because you've been through a lot from, you know, injuries and in college, having your wife be there for you, the whole support system, and now getting to where you're now outside of football, continue on your journey.
I mean, it's been a lot in regards of just trying to figure out, you know, where to go, how does things look, you know. The media space right now is so former player, current player driven in every sport.
Yeah,
right?
Very true.
From football, basketball, down to golf. And I think it's remarkable. And I think, you know, I think it's where it is right now. It's kind of like NIL. It's kind of like the housing market a couple of years ago where it's doing so well.
Right.
But at some point, or however, it will reset. And how and the way it resets, we're not really sure. And so for me, business-wise, just looking through it, I don't really feel comfortable and confident trying to keep up with the bigger names, trying to keep up with some of the conversation dialogue. For me, it's just more about I'm very inquisitive about people. And then I'm also inquisitive. I watch a lot of film and just kind of sit in that area of just kind of evaluating players and seeing what I like, dislike, and then just kind of talking about it and letting that live right there. And, you know, people know in the past there's been current and players that have strongly disagreed with my opinion or my perspective. And I don't have a problem. I really don't have a problem with it. I just, I think how things go about it. I ran into a guy today at the airport here in Vegas. I was talking to DeAndre Swift when he was with Detroit. And when they traded, when the, he was traded, and then Detroit, and when the Eagles traded for and signed Rashad Penny and DeAndre Swift, I made a statement. I was like, hey, based off these two guys' injuries, they really only got one player because these guys are constantly injured.
Yep.
And I know he heard it. And so I saw him and I said, hey, man, I made a statement about this, and I just wanted to let you know. I said, because I'm a face-to-face guy. If I'm wrong, I like to talk to the people face-to-face. And I said, man, you're a hell of a player, bro. And I made the statement of you don't stay healthy, which prior to this year.
He hadn't.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's what my data information told me. But what he's done in Philly, how, you know, he's always been a dynamic football player.
Correct.
When he's on the field. And so I got the opportunity to share with him. I said, man, I was wrong and you proved me wrong. And I said, man, the way sometimes you run your routes and the way they use you in your offense, man, sometimes you run better than some of these receivers out here, right? Which is not, you know, obviously not the tier ones and, the, you know, the number one wide receivers with, right, you know, 18 APY or, you know, but a number three, a number four wide receiver who they're giving it to DeAndre Swift. And he looked and he was like, wow. And I said, man, I just wanted to make sure you heard it from.
Yeah, he received it.
He received it. Yeah. And, I mean, Orlando Brown, when he was coming out of Oklahoma, he had a horrible.
Probably one of the worst of all time. I mean, combines.
Yes. And I was there.
You were there. You saw it.
I experienced it.
It,
right,
was bad.
And I was with Jeff Saturday. Not Jeff Saturday. He's with ESPN. I was with Sean O'Hare.
Yeah.
And Sean O'Hare and Charles Davis.
Yeah.
We were on set. And I was like, wow.
Did that just happen?
And he was supposed to be one of the tops.
Yeah.
And was horrific.
Right. So, talk to him in Baltimore. I think after his rookie year, second year, because I was there for Thursday night, said something to him. And man, he was like, why'd you do that? Because I am critical.
Yeah.
Because this is also a business where critiquing and being critical is the difference between you lasting and not lasting. And so so for me, I've always kind of sat in that place. I'm not the tallest.
Right.
People say I have a chip on my shoulder. I don't have a chip on my shoulder. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why. When I say I don't have a chip on my shoulder.
Okay.
I have been playing football long enough and in my stature where I've heard people talk about my game, mm-hmm, or my stature as if I wasn't in the room.
Right. Mm.
And so it's not a chip. I actually remember what they said.
Yeah.
So it's not, I have a chip on my shoulder, want to prove them wrong. It's actually, I heard you say, a player like you will never get beyond high school. Or a player like you will never last because you're a hothead or you're this or you that. So for me, I am just repeating things that some of these people told me. When I was a kid, I wasn't doing great in school.
Right.
And a family member, my mom was scolding me and was telling me, hey, you need to shape up. Remember what you want to do? And someone told, I had a family member there and I don't want to say who it was because I don't want to do, mm-hmm, that to them. And I remember it, I was in the 10th grade or 11th grade and I was messing up. My mom was trying to get me back on pace.
Yeah.
And at the time, we were out of the house because not my dad, but her husband at the time was abusing her. So we were fleeing a domestic violence situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my attention and focus was lax.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual said, after they heard what my mom was saying, interrupted, say, you need to have a more realistic goal. I was in the 11th grade,
yeah,
and their family member interrupted and said, you need to have a more realistic goal.
That sat with you.
Huh? That sat with me?
Clearly, you remember it.
It didn't sit with me in like, oh, I'm going to prove you wrong. Man, it was the most defeating thing that I heard from a family member that you can hear.
Yeah.
Because that family member was like everybody else who was not encouraging me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to be encouraged at least by family, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not talking about the outside people, but the people who's most, who you know, help raise you, who can whoop your butt.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that I experienced.
Yeah.
On top of the reason where we were at that time was based on the situation with the domestic violence.
Right.
And
right.
So now I'm already kicked. Now you come off the top rope, pow, right in the ribs. And so, like, I experienced so much of that so early on as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled to handle attaboys for a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, I would not sit still for you to give me an attaboy. I never received it because I was always waiting for the but. So, for me, that's why, like, I still struggle.
Yeah.
With the accolades. I'm like, oh.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know what? This is a great time because my man Peanut right here.
So I was like you. We had Brandon Marshall on. Well, first off, let me just say thanks for sharing that. That was
vulnerable. I appreciate it. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So me like you, not a similar situation. Similar in the sense of like accolades. Like I just didn't receive them. I kind of downplay them.
Yes.
So Brandon Marshall was on. And me and Brandon had beef when he was in Chicago.
That's shocking and surprising.
So
I'm taken back by that statement.
Brandon came on the show and was like, it was just like all love. We grown now, you know what I'm saying? Nobody trying to fight or do none of that, you know. It was all love. And he was just like, man, I gotta say, like, I went to Denver, I went to Jets. Miami, I went Jets. To the Jets. He was like, you are by far
Seattle the
greatest receiver or DB that I went against in practice. Like, you got me better and you. And I was just like, damn, I had zero clue. And looking at Rome, and I was like, we had said something earlier, and I looked at Rome, I looked at Brandon, was like, hey, man, I received that. And then Rome was like, see, that's what I'm talking about. I've been telling you, you need to start receiving it more. Yeah. So
gotta be able to accept
I'm it. Recently like you, just I'm starting to receive the compliments and my blessings more. So I just say, hey, man, kudos to you, and just open up that heart and just keep receiving them. I like Absolutely. That. That's dope. That's dope. I do got to know the question, though. Yes, so with you saying all these things, do you feel like you are Steve Smith Sr. You are like one of the greatest receivers in the era when we played, right?
Appreciate that.
You got all the accolades. You got the Pro Bowls. You got the All Pros. Do you feel that you have a platform to say these things about these players? Because you are a former player. You were him at the time. You're not just Steve Smith, the NFL Network analyst, who has never played, who's just a high school journalist, or excuse me, a college guy with a degree in journalism. Like you're him. You have all the accolades to go with your resume. You know what I'm saying? So in my opinion, I feel like we former players, like we can get down and dirty and talk about a player and not disrespect them when we speak, but we can kind of just be honest about their style of play. Do you feel like you earned that right?
That's a fantastic question. Because I don't believe I've sat down and thought about have I earned the right. I don't really operate in that earn the right kind of, I let the film tell me.
I got you.
So, you know, some people don't like what I have to say about the film. And I've learned too a lot. There are more because of the way the media is going,
right?
And YouTube, all that stuff. There's a lot of non-players, who have an opinion, and they feel if they can articulate it better than a former player, that it just maybe sounds better.
No doubt,
right? And so I always find it. I say, look. A lot of the non-players got a lot of great things to say as if they know more than the players. But I would say there are players that I've worked with in the past, not on my current job, because, you know, I've played with players who other receivers who can't read coverages. I've played with quarterbacks who can't read coverages. Who have never identified the Mike linebacker in a pre-snap.
Yeah.
I've played with linemen who, you know, can't read a bull rush. Like, I play with tight ends. So there's a lot of different things. So not every football player or player has the ability to play. There's a lot of things we all know. There's a lot of players who can be hid in systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, what I try to now where I live and I'm comfortable is I just let the film tell me.
Yeah.
And if you don't like what I say about the film, I'm not really sure what I can tell you.
I've always respected us more, though, because we play the game and we know what that situation is like.
Yeah.
Versus someone who's but just.
But I've learned, too, that there are some players that you play with mm-hmm. who cannot riff. Who, reading is fundamental. Who can't read coverages. Who don't know why. And I think that's what separated me. When I played at Utah, man, we played at Utah is not to Utah today. We played at Wyoming. We played Air Force. We played Colorado State. You know, and what I mean by these are teams who had one or two players, one or two athletes, and the rest were scheme and zone.
Yeah.
I remember playing Air Force. We played Air Force. And they said, look, we're going to have a few trick plays. But understand when we had these trick plays, Air Force, you only could trick them once.
Yeah, because they're all doing their –
they they're doing. Going to stay in line.
They're disciplined.
They're disciplined. So we got to do it perfect. And if you go back and look at an Air Force game or a Navy game, there are very few penalties. Some of them, damn near zero.
Yeah.
From that – the servicemen's team.
Right, right.
So it's – so that's – so for me, I'm okay with, you know, I just watch enough film that I feel comfortable. I feel confident. And I'm constantly watching film. But when I'm watching film, I'm looking at the small details. How a guy gets off the line of scrimmage. What is his release? Where's his head? Where's his eyes? Mm-hmm. Is he catching the ball looking over there? Is he body catching? Right? I got in trouble going on Club Shay Shay because I said some guys aren't pure hands catcher. And then they got mad. And then to draw some passes with them hands. Have I dropped passes? Absolutely. But also because I drop passes, know why sometimes guys draw passes.
Right.
And so that's what I try to go through. That's what I try to focus on.
So I first of all, I love your honesty. You know that about me and you relationship. And I want to know this, though, because I hear this on the radio a lot, especially in Charlotte, is that you not being in the Hall of Fame short-sighted. People in Carolina are mad.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do all that. You got the accolades, you got the numbers, but they let other people in front of you. Is that another part of your story? Or how do you take it personally, knowing who you are? And I know because you don't discuss it.
Yeah.
So how does that go about in the household and with Steve Smith inside of him?
I don't discuss it because it's kind of nothing to discuss. Because you don't question God's time.
True.
A couple of years ago, if I'd have went in as a Hall of Fame, I probably wouldn't look at it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have went in hell about time and, you know, you act the way you like. See, that's why they can't get him nothing. Because they don't know how to act. You know, for me now, like, as it goes, all right. When it happens, it happens. But I'm also happy for the guys and a group of guys that I get to be semifinalists.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that for me that I kind of like, wow, I can't even make a finalist in regards to the voting is some of the players who are in there, we're all kind of the same. So, you know, let us all be disappointed together.
Yeah.
And I haven't got that, but other than that, that's it. I don't believe that this guy is in and he's a turd ball and I'm the best. I don't believe that. Torrey Holt, I believe that he deserves to be in.
Yep.
This is also a guy that I respect and like admire and watched and consider a big brother.
So my rookie year, I think it was like one of the last games of the season. This was when Moss was in his prime. We on the 10-yard line, goal line, whatever, and Dante Culpepper throws it up. Me and Moss in the end zone, similar to you and I in that playoff game. I come down with it, right? So that was kind of
so
like.
So technically, it's not the same thing.
It was the same thing. It's all Chris Harris. Chris Harris, if you're watching this, screw you, dude.
Man, like, I love Chris Harris, bro. He was so smart. Slow as Heinz ketchup. But bro, he could get
always
there.
In the right place.
Always. I don't know
how he just hit the wrong person. Yeah. He just hit the wrong person.
But you don't question God's timing.
Yeah, I guess. I might have questions on that one because I really needed that pick on that particular play. But that was like the play that kind of made me my rookie year, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of is, that's the play that put me on the map with all the plays, with all your catches, with all your touchdowns, receptions, everything you've done, the yak after the catch. What's the play for you that makes you Steve Smith?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a fantastic question. For me, it has to be, it's the stiff arm. It's the yak.
Is there a specific stiff arm or a specific play you got the yak on or what?
It's just the stiff arm because it was, I'm 5'9".
Yeah.
And I was always about, right, you know, me and Roman had some great battles.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always, and even other guys, it was always, I always had to remind people, you know, I can hit you too. And I think a lot of defenders forgot that.
Yes, yeah, it's true.
And so I, for me, it was a stiff arm because I'm a receiver. I'm a post catch the ball. But a lot of times when I caught the ball, I was squaring up to be able to see where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
But then give you that stiff arm.
Yeah.
And so that's the part that I really, I just enjoyed.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, well, since you brought it up, let's go to it. So, 2010 or 11.
Yeah.
I got a flag. I hit you a little late in the end zone. You scored a touchdown.
So number one. Hilarious play.
Well, first of all, Jabari Greer.
See, he made a fantastic catch.
Stiff-armed him in the air coming down.
Caught it. Got him off you.
Yeah.
I was covering Greg all the way across the field.
Yeah.
I run across. You know, number one, what was your first reaction when I hit you? Because you crossed the goal line. Like,
well, you remember me and Sean used to go at it.
Yeah, Sean loved talking trash to anybody.
Sean,
and our thing was, don't talk trash to Steve Smith.
And Sean,
he gets better.
On the Saints at the time.
Sean would talk to me.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, and like, I would, so we literally would be yelling at each other. He'd be like, ah. Oh. We gonna do you. I was like, Sean, this dude's terrible today. And he, F you, Steve. F you back. Right? And so when I did, I was like, this is a trap. They're trying to get me kicked out of the game for a penalty. So I'm not going to fall for it.
You didn't. I was totally surprised.
Yes.
I hit you and I stood there because I'm like, he's gonna fight me.
And I was saying to myself.
And you did. You just looked at me. We made eye contact.
But then when everybody came and they started fighting, I said, oh, hell. But, and so what I thought, I think I said on my podcast, but why I thought he hit me late was because around that time, it was right around Halloween.
Yes.
And he took his helmet off. And I asked him, I was like, bro, you still have gray hair. How? And he gave me a look.
Right.
And Vilma was like, that's his hair. But I never knew that.
Same thing.
I thought it was like a leftover from a Halloween costume. Now, some people say, well, Halloween costume. Bro, Halloween costumes, you never know. He could have been a Black Adam family member. I don't know. I'm just going with, I was like, Halloween, blah, blah. Because I used to do a Halloween party. So
yeah.
And that's what I thought. That's what I always thought.
Halloween in September.
So
No. This one was in October.
Okay. It was funny because he said something to Vilma and thought it was funny himself. And then I hit him like two plays later.
Yes.
And he thought it was because of that.
I really did.
And I had no idea until we discussed this. And me and him had become friends. Yeah. And we'd actually never talked about this play or whatever happened before until I came on your podcast.
Yeah.
The Cut to It podcast. You guys should check it out. It's pretty good on YouTube.
Yeah,
talk about all kinds of things,
yeah.
Including draft updates, the whole nine. He really does a really great job with that. So It was funny for me. I was just like, I just ran too far, and I was just like, it. I didn't run over here for nothing. So I just hit him. And
but he used to do stuff. Like he hates that. He didn't want you to celebrate.
I never let anybody celebrate.
He would do, and I was like,
he saw it on
not in your face.
He was like, because like I hate when receivers get like a 5-yard gain, then they get up in like first down. And I would like go
that's
out of
that
my
piss
way.
Him off. That's
but
that
here's the problem.
I would go out of my way to not let him flex.
But here's the problem. It wasn't like 5-yard gains.
It was like 20, 50, 20, 30
you
yard gains.
Offense?
Yeah.
Run, third down, who they throwing it to?
Yeah.
Okay, third and 15. So it wasn't a 5-yard
gain. And I would
game.
Like stand over him, hold him down.
He would like hit my hand.
Yeah, just like, nah.
Like, come on,
like,
bro.
Nah, you ain't
or like, you know, for me, I was spinning and he like, hit the ball or try to hit the ball out of my hand before I could spin. The tactic was remarkable.
I don't know. One of my favorite celebrations you did, it might have been when you played us, is when you wiped the baby.
No, that was against Atlanta.
That was against, yeah. To me, that's my all-time favorite. You changed the diaper. Like, that was, that's one of my all-time favorite ones.
But with you guys, you remember.
You don't have to talk about us. It's cool.
No, Chicago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You ain't got to talk about Chicago.
Actually, because the first game, I had put up like 150, 170 yards. And all y'all talked about it was Alex Brown, Lance Briggs. All y'all talked about is y'all kept me out of the end zone. And y'all had Vasher. Was it Vasher?
Nate Vasher.
Yeah, y'all had Nate Vasher. And y'all were in zone coverage. That's all y'all talked about. And then, you know, we got into town. And so for the next game, I was like, yeah.
This, you're talking about the playoff game.
The playoff game.
Yeah.
It's like, how you going to celebrate a 5'9 receiver getting, you know, 30 yards away from 200?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good accomplishment. And so I went back and I just watched all the film. I was like, man, I'm going to get these boys. And so on that play, mm-hmm. It wasn't a hand signal. We never changed the play.
That was the bad intel. Hey, Zoom. Zoom told me, he was like, Peter.
Who did?
Jerry Azuma was on the sideline. He was our nickel. So Jerry was like, hey, they're doing whatever signal. He was like, Peter, it's a you call it smoke. He was like, it's a smoke pass. It's a smoke. So that's why I blitzed it. Like
I ran. Was the play. You were sitting, I'll use the word cattywampus. You were kind of sitting stagnant. It was a Hunt Street circle. Hitch under streak.
Right.
Bro, I just ran to go. Jake didn't know. I just ran it. I was like, nah, I'm running this go. This ain't happening.
Bad intel. So you know Zoom. I can't wait to call him after.
You just completely just made it up. You just went.
Yes, but chemistry is important.
Yeah,
right.
And
right.
Jake knew, like, when I was running, if I was going to break down. Like, right. You knew how. I had no intentions. I looked, I was like, hey, receivers, why we trash talking too? We get out a lot of time just sitting out on the island. You think of a lot of great things. And I'm lined up and I'm looking. He's going through his cadence. He ain't moving. Nah.
Cause I was blitzing. I was like, I'm blitzing.
That's exactly what I said.
Nah.
Just go. And I just
and I knew I messed up because as I took my first two steps,
here's the thing. I pushed him when I went back to pass him. I pushed him so to make sure to get a little bit if he get the jump that if the ball is late. So when I ran past him, I literally just pushed him.
I was going. Like, no. And I turned around as quick as I could.
Grab me.
God dang it, Zoom. The whole time I'm chasing you, I'm mad at Zoom. Like, he didn't want to, stupid mother. Oh, please, Mike Brown. Please, Tiger. God dang it, Mike Brown. Oh, this is bad. Oh, God, this is bad. He's celebrating. Oh, they're playing the music. Oh, God. This is bad. That's me. Son of a biscuit. Yep. Yeah.
I think it's amazing, number one, that you brought up the fact of something I never thought about is, as a receiver, how much free time you guys got out there when you're not getting the ball, the things that come across your mind.
Oh.
What's probably the craziest thing or the most, non-football thing you thought about while being on the football
team? For me, it's a lot of stuff.
I'll tell you what, taking the Super Bowl 38, what was the most you thought about in that Super Bowl 38 game? If there was something that you could have done to change the outcome of that game, what would it have been?
man, it was a that game happened so fast.
Right.
I could tell you I don't remember that.
Okay.
It happened so fast. Things were happening so fast.
How about
fast.
Regular game? I want to know. Regular? I've never thought about that. That's never crossed my mind. Nobody's
man,
ever said
regular
that.
Games, I would I'm such a thinker. Like, I would, man, what I gotta do this week. You know, sometimes we weren't very good. What my offseason gonna be like. I did a few internships. So, you know, trying to do that. Stocks. I'm in a stock, so thinking about stocks. I love cooking, so thinking about cooking or like
middle of the game.
Yeah, where are we going to eat? One of the things too that I would think about a lot, which led me to hire a sports psychologist before it was the end thing,
mm-hmm.
is there were a few times when I played, I asked myself and told myself, or like I had an internal conversation, I don't know if I can keep this up. I'm not sure if I can keep up this pace of playing this way.
Right.
So there's a few times where I had a lot of negative thoughts mm-hmm. about myself.
While playing.
I think that's normal, though.
I don't think that's normal at all.
Thank you.
I don't think that's normal
it's
at all.
I think it's normal that you go back and forth with it. And
I'm talking about, I only really thought I was going to make it like 6 or 7 years in the league. Like, I did not believe I was going to last that long.
You played what, 13?
16.
Come on, don't short stack the man. Three seasons.
I'm sorry about that.
That was, I'm Captain, I like to call myself Captain Petty. So we played in Baltimore.
Oh, this was amazing.
Yeah, we played in Baltimore.
He didn't talk to anybody before the game, except me.
I didn't talk at all.
Did players come up to you and speak
to
you?
Yes.
Hey, Smitty, what's up?
Yeah.
Yes.
What was
all
what
did he do? Wouldn't talk to nobody.
I wouldn't talk to anybody.
He was like Mr. Angry. I was there. He came up and talked to me. I thought it was like, oh, well. And everybody looked at me like, oh, why is he talking to you? I'm like, yeah, I thought it, we
some
got
stuff
cool.
Some stuff it had was, happened.
Yes.
Yeah. How it happened, it was so much. I was like, and I'm not going to say who on the team, but someone told me, like, they had a team meeting, and Ron Rivera was like, you know Steve, you know how he's going to be, and so let's just be prepared, you know. And it's kind of, you know how it is. When you're on a team, you're liked by the coach. And then when you're off the team, all the things, how they truly feel about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay. And so I just had in my mind, I'm not going to say nothing. Because I normally, if I say I'm not going to say anything, that means at some point I would say something. But I didn't say nothing. Like I walked out of there, I was like, no, I'm not going
to
talk.
He had nothing to say to nobody.
Nobody. Like,
and what was the performance? What was the outcome?
Well, on the first play, which I love Baltimore at that, Harbaugh is all about team and players.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, man, we're going to feed you. I was like, cool, bet. So we ran a traditional Kyle Shanahan / Gary Kubiak offense play action with the drag. And so I had the drag route flat. And Romer's right there. And I was running. And I caught the ball, Romer's right there. But what I did is I slowed down and looked at him and stiff armed him.
He did.
I wanted to stiff arm Roman. And so I caught it, pow, and then took off. And I was like, all right, I'm good.
I mean, he ate that day, though. And he ate on everybody else but me besides that play. Yeah. I mean, so.
So he's still
happy for him, especially seeing what Steve has done. And I'd like to give you a flowers now and this opportunity to talk about what I think that you do the best, which is serve your community
in
Charlotte with your foundation. Could you maybe tell us about that? How long it's been going on and how much you have really changed and done? You got your own office space. Like, it's huge in the city of Charlotte for everything that you've been able to do and accomplish with your foundation.
Thank you. It's the Steve Smith Family Foundation. We just hit our 11th year last year and rebranding ourselves just because I started the foundation. I just remember based on our when we first started the foundation, it was really about serving the community in areas that I know, which is underserved.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did and how it started we were giving kids opportunity to go to camps. Mm-hmm. And we were doing, I partnered with Samaritan Feet, Manual Homemade, Washing Feet. So it did a lot of different things. And then we started really hone in and focus on some things in the pandemic. I caught wind that they were giving all these underprivileged public school kids laptops and saying, you're good. They had nowhere for them to go. And so we took it upon ourselves, the foundation. We said, hey, let's kind of like cultivate an academy. And so what we did is we found an office space where they can also social distance. And we took, I think we took about 100 something students that were public school, because a lot of the kids, but the kids that we targeted and focused on mm-hmm. were kids who were considered homelessness. Homelessness in Charlotte, and the criteria would be living in a hotel, shelter, living with a family member, or out of a car. And so in the shelters in COVID, a lot of times those kids slept in a shelter, but they went to school.
Right.
Most shelters don't allow children to be in the shelter. So it was a unique situation for everyone. Obviously, COVID was mm-hmm. for everything.
Right.
And so we took homeless kids who couldn't be in shelters. And then we partnered up, and I kind of called them out, was CMS in Charlotte. And so they bussed these kids. And our building that we were renting out was also a drop center where they can give these kids their lunches and breakfast. So they got breakfast, lunch. And then I partnered with some local organizations, some local companies, some local restaurants. And we would do Freedom Friday. And Freedom Friday was a local business come in and feed these kids.
Yeah.
A meal, a restaurant. And man, it was dope. And we did that for those 17, 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then I figured out the teacher's assistants didn't have jobs. So I figured out how much the teacher assistants were getting paid. I said, all right, whatever the teacher assistants, I know, but I'm not going to say the number. Whatever they were getting paid, I was like, all right, throw $5 on there and see if they'll come work for us.
They took it.
Jumped on it. Because it was dire straits.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, so if this is what they're making, let's make it worth their while. Let's actually, when they work for me, let's upgrade them. And so that's what we did. And then we started to realize the social-emotional part of it. And then our medical clinic that we already had operating and running, that was a free clinic, we started to see the medical part was just okay. We had, at the time, 6,000 patients, and 75% of our patients were seeking mental health. I think in the first 6 months, mm-hmm. we had 1,900 clinical hours just dedicated to mental health. And so we started to realize that focus on mental health.
Yeah.
And so we started doing mental health, start talking to the county. And they said, hey, man, can you take what you guys doing in mental health? Can you do it and make it its own? So I met with a councilman, Anthony Troutman, and my good buddy who at the time, Rocky. And we started sitting down, and we had a meeting. They said, hey, what does your clinic do? I said, all right, our clinic does this. He said, well, can you do a mental health? I said, sure. So we did that. But I was like, hold on. This got to be a standalone. And so ran the numbers. And because I'm heavily involved, ran the numbers. I said, all right, for us to do it, this is how much it's going to cost, standalone. He said, all right. And so in the draft in Cleveland, when I was working there, my team set up a meeting, and Cleveland has a mental health facility. So I went there and visited them and try to figure out how to do it. And it's a psychiatric ward. So we did it and built it. And so we opened up the Steve Smith Family Foundation, BHUC, operated by Daymark, interviewed by five or six medical providers.
Yeah.
And open up a BHUC, and the BHUC is Behavioral Health Urgent Care. 24 hours, 365 days, And you come in, if you have, you get assessment, come in if something happens, you go in there. And so that's what we did. And so we have a clinic that operates. And then we have a mental health facility, and primarily a lot of the people are uninsured. And so now we're in talks of doing some other stuff as well. But we serve in a mental health capacity. We serve as young as 4, as old as 75. And so since we've been open since last March, we've avoided almost 1,000 ER emergency. So that's what we do.
I love that. That's why I wanted you to talk about that.
Yeah.
I knew that.
I didn't know. I had no clue. I'm glad you asked that.
I know how involved he's been and how much his foundation has made an impact in that community and all the things you're doing. You know?
That's amazing.
And
that's dope.
Congrats. Yeah, it's been really, really good. I want to make sure.
I appreciate that. And we got a brick and mortar.
For sure.
And the cool part about it is all of our programs, we have the 3 P's. And so it's part, you're either part of the program, your partner, or you're a person we're going to highlight. And all of our places that we operate out of, the foundation owns it. I don't believe in these people are giving their money. I don't believe in renting, wasted money. So our BHUC facility, we own a brick and mortar. It's about 12,000 square feet. We own that. Our medical clinic, we own that outright as well. Looking at expanding that as well in the next couple of years and doing that. But I believe in ownership.
I think that's dope. That's dope.
Yeah.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
So I got a Baltimore question for you real quick. So you're, one of your last years in Baltimore, you tore your Achilles.
Double rupture.
How you do that?
Tore it off the heel and in the middle.
So double rupture, tear your Achilles. Why was it important for you to come back one more season?
It actually wasn't.
Okay. Talk about that. Tell me why.
I was set to retire. What was crazy is that throughout that year, starting in May, I was getting this like burning sensation in the back of my heel. And they're like, oh, it's just arthritis. And found out I actually slightly tore it then. And so when I tore it, Dr. Anderson repaired it.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, this thing is funky in there. And after he did surgery, I said, what do you mean? He said it was upside down and it had fresh scar tissue. So I tore it off the bone here and then in the middle. So he had to, they had to cut it open, take my Achilles tendon, and drill it with a nail back into my heel.
Okay.
And then sew it up. And so I was like, oh, okay. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
And my agent took my write-up when I was coming out of college, Steve Smith, number 7 from Utah. And he mailed it to me and said, you don't have to come back. But if you are, you remember you're not supposed to be here this long. And he mailed it to me. And I read everything, all the lines. And a write-up from the draft, it's a collaboration or a culmination of all the scouts and teams. And they just put on there, like, you know, inconsistent. I remember reading on there, it said, I had a 4th gear, but not a 3rd gear.
What does that mean?
I don't even know.
I was like, what is that?
So... doesn't run the same route twice. Small frame, injury prone. And in college, I broke my neck. I did a C4 burst fracture. So just all of that stuff. And so I was like, wow. And so, man, he knew me. I had the same age my whole time. So he knew me. He knew what I needed.
Yeah.
And so when he sent that, got to work.
That's what's up. That's what's up. So, amazing career. I think you got an amazing life. You got a great story.
Thank you.
Clearly, you didn't do it all yourself.
Absolutely not.
You've had people help you along the way.
Millions.
you've definitely had some people help you along the way. If you could only pick four on your Mount Rushmore of greatness of people that you look up to or mentors, who would those people be?
One, it has to be my wife with her patience. I could be a handful. When I played, it was around the house. The family walked on a lot of eggshells because of my emotional immaturity, my inability to really know and understand why I'm feeling the way I was feeling or how. So my family really struggled with, dang, why is dad always mad? What's wrong with dad? And so they struggled with that. And so now today, for me, I got four kids, 26, 22, 18, and 9. My 9-year-old says things to me that my 26-year-old is like, wow, we'd have lost all our fronts talking to you that way. So I would say my wife and my kids right on there because they knew me.
Yeah.
You know, they're around me. Man, I remember my wife when I broke my neck in college and we were just engaged. Man, there were times where I couldn't reach.
Yeah.
And she helped me. I couldn't wash my back. Right. And I wasn't in the league.
Right. Yeah.
And it wasn't looking like I was going to the league either because I was in a neck harness. So my wife and my kids. Another guy is Fred Graves. He's my wide receivers coach in college. Mm-hmm. He recruited me to University of Utah. He's a father figure to me to this day. We still talk. So he's there.
You got two.
I know, because if you know how it is in the black community, if you leave one out, the wrong one could be calling me right now. My grandmother.
Yeah.
Both my grandmothers are Betty, but my Betty Smith, my dad's mom, she taught me how to cook. She taught me how to feed myself. And I would say my mom. We haven't always had a great relationship. My mom was not very loving. I know my mom loves me. We talk. But my mom was very physical with me when she didn't like the way I operated or, you know, I did things. And she had me washing dishes when I was like in the first grade, standing on the stool because I didn't have the height. I knew how to wash clothes by the age of 12 years old. She just taught me a lot of things, how to take care of myself. I disagreed on how her method on how she approached things because that approach really tainted my vision on how to parent and be loving. But I would say that would be my four. Because they all gave me something that either to think about, to meditate or pray on, and left with me good and bad.
Yeah, I think your openness, your honesty has been really, really impressive. And then not only that, but these are lasting impressions on your life. You know what I mean? The fact that you can remember, like, no, in first grade, I was washing dishes, standing on the stool. Like, that's a very vivid.
It's a core memory.
Yeah, it's a very vivid memory for you. And so with all that being said and understanding, like, your openness, I'd like for you to give us a little bit of advice for the people that watch and listen. And, you know, this thing is called Second Acts Podcast for a reason. Uh-huh. And so could you give us a little bit of advice of how to handle the transition from no longer playing football to getting to that second act? I think so many of us, all of us, we all struggle for different ways whenever we put down the ball. And that's even from high school going to college. College going to the league, whatever that is. Talk to us about that transition, how you handled it, your struggles and any advice you would give for all of us that are listening and watching, because truly that's the piece. That's the secret ingredient that we're all looking for.
Still working it out. Yeah, really.
It's I agree with you.
Yeah. Still working it out. I think the biggest advice and the most important thing I would give you for me has been grieving, learning how to grieve. Because I don't think people really understand the impact of grieving, right? I didn't realize when I left Baltimore, packing up my apartment, closing the door and driving home, that when I left and closed that door and dropped off my key, that I was going to be okay with never, ever playing football again. I'm not playing. And then when COVID happened, after COVID, we downsized from a home that we had lived in for 10 years. And I had to pack up again. But I wasn't packing up our home. I was packing up all my crap that I was holding on to. That was my old career. That in a new house, it had no space. See, in a 10-year house, I had a whole area about me. Mannequin with my jerseys on them, the Panther, Pro Bowl. I had my cleats. I still had my shoulder pads that I wore my whole career. I had all of that stuff. I had my sons, my oldest sons. He played soccer at DePaul. So he had his stuff. I just had all this stuff. And I had to pack it up, put it in a box, because there was no room for it in a new house. And, bro, I was packing it up, and I started crying. Because I didn't realize I never really handled it.
Yeah. Right.
I just left. Then I went into TV. Because they offered me. But I never really sat down and thought about, like, how is this going to impact you? And, you know, people and people say, oh, I know you miss it. I don't. When I first started doing TV and they run out of tunnel, like my skin started crawling. But after now, when they do it, I'm like, oh, man, that's cool. I watch it and I go, I wonder what they're going to do coming out of the tunnel. Now I just am interested to see how they do it, like those individual people. When I first stopped, I missed it.
Yeah.
So grieving well and going through each step and understanding all those steps and knowing that it's going to be ugly. You're going to have denial. You're going to have anger. You're going to have hopelessness. You're going to have bargaining. Then you come to that resolution and then you finally are okay. But man, you got to do a lot of work in there. And then that bargaining hopelessness, man, that's a dangerous place. That's where drug addiction comes in. That's where suicidal thoughts come in. And if you're not prepared and ready for it and have a plan, and I didn't have a plan. I just said, man, I'm just feeling funky. I need some help. Cause it's not, I'm going to snap. It was why? Like it just like waking up just disappointed.
Yeah.
I don't have nothing to be disappointed about. I really didn't. I really don't. But struggling to find the joy and happiness in things. You know, as a football player, we are so used to looking for the next play. The NFL for me was what I did not realize. Grew up in Los Angeles, California. And anybody know anything about Los Angeles or you hear about it, PCH is a beautiful highway.
Yeah.
Man, NFL was PCH highway. And you know what? I rarely pulled over and took the sunset in. I rarely pulled over and smelled the flowers. I was too busy just trying to get there. And on one tank of gas and realizing it's impossible. So that's what I would say, man. For, you know, process whatever you're going through. There are more years, right? Because I really struggle with, you know, how I grew up. I've lived more years out of poverty than I have that I was in poverty. But that taker's mentality is still in me.
Right.
That get it, or I wish you would, is still in me. So I gotta work on that. It's every day, man. I was flying in here from Orlando because I did a little side gig out there, and man, I was on the plane, man. I was reading my scriptures and just journaling, and every day before I journal, I put the date and I write, how am I feeling today?
Yeah,
and it's been refreshing. Cause you don't really realize how you feel, and then you start writing. You're like, "Damn, quit complaining."
Very true,
right? So that's because if you are happy and content, or at least optimistic, gratefulness, it oozes out of you, just like anger oozes out of you. Mm-hmm. You gotta get those toxins, and then when you're crying. What you're doing is you're getting, when you cry sometimes, you're getting those toxins out of you. So for me, man, that's what I would say.
Beautiful.
I love it.
I do. Oh, Smitty, man, I thank you for that, man.
Appreciate it.
I knew you'd give us something good. But I want to know that, because I think that's the biggest thing that we've learned doing this podcast, is that we all struggle with it. A lot of times we don't even know how to handle it. We don't know where it's coming from. We don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
But this transition is real, and it's real for everybody. And we all got, and there's no playbook to it. There's no right way to do it.
No.
It comes with no directions, and it all hits us at some point.
Everyone's transition is different.
Yes.
Yeah. It's all customized to you, the player, and
how it's a la carte.
Yeah. All the way.
How it works and how you deal with it. So hey, man, appreciate you being vulnerable, sharing all that. That was deep. Thanks for sharing it. I'm glad. I feel like I know you even more now.
Appreciate you sharing. That was one of the things I tried to do when I played, is I kept that hard exterior shell. I didn't want people to know me.
Yeah.
And I think it benefited me, because now over here, when people, they're like, oh, he actually, he's not dumb, right? He doesn't walk around mad at the lettuce because it's wilted.
Which I think he's still mad on the inside. But
really?
I love you, though. Huh. I love you. So it's all good, man. Hey, look, I guess we'll get you up out of here. All of our listeners, our viewers, thank you so much, man, for always tuning in. As always, tell a friend to tell a friend to what, Peanut?
Tell a friend.
Thank you. Give us a 5-star rating. Hit that follow button. Give us a review. Anywhere you pick up your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, please keep tuning in, man. We're doing big things here. Getting great stories from legends like my man Steve Smith right here. So appreciate it.
Steve Smith, NFL Player Second Acts Podcast. We out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.